Welcome everyone to the Elemental Awakening. I'm Giovanni, your host. I got two really special people here today. We have Tristan and Michael from Ultra Speaking, and I met them in Toronto almost a year ago now. It was fall of 2018, right?
Yeah, yep. I believe so.
And we instantly connected. I felt I was really excited about what these guys were doing and the energy they brought to the weekend experience we had, and we can share a bit about that, but I just wanted to welcome you guys to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, man. Very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you like this content, guys, just remind you now, as always, here's my plug, to like, subscribe, follow, leave a comment, share it on social media, tell your mom to listen, whatever. If you like it, if you don't, then I don't know why you're here in the first place. But anyways, welcome. It's going to be some interesting talk today. So we're going to jump into a bunch of different topics like usual. We're going to talk about business. We'll talk maybe a bit about psychedelics, talk a lot about speaking and the mind and the brain and a bit about their story. And yeah, we'll just bounce some questions off each other. So I guess let's just start with your guys' story. Like, how did Ultra Speaking come to be? And I know you guys have a pretty interesting story about that. So if you want to share a bit about your background and how you got to be doing what you're doing.
Sure, of course. We didn't prepare for this question at all. It totally caught us by surprise. I think the interesting part of how all of this happened was that I feel like we're the last guys to be doing any sort of speaking coaching. Tristan has a master's in computer science. I have a bachelor's in computer science. And we both grew up kind of on a completely different path. And so, you know, we can talk a little bit later about the crazy journey we've been on, how in my journey I was a total, how do I overcome my anxiety? How do I overcome my imposter syndrome? How do I get out of engineering because I wasn't finding fulfillment? And how do I build confidence? And it was a simple Google search that led me to Toastmasters.
Google saves the day again.
You know, if it had recommended, like, you really want to build confidence, build up your body, we would be ultra bodybuilding today. But no, it led me to speaking, and I think the evolution of my journey was just that once I started practicing public speaking. Specifically, once I started practicing table topics, speaking on the spot, not having a lot of time to prepare, that skill I found was transformational. I would use it everywhere, conversations with my girlfriend at the time, my family, my boss, like everything started to feel like I was wielding this superpower, and so I just got addicted to learning it more and more and more. And
Toastmasters, for those who don't know, it's like a meetup where people just talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
People want to practice their speaking in a safe environment.
And it's North America wide, right? They have them everywhere.
It's
chapters.
Worldwide.
Worldwide, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think 140 countries.
Very cool.
Yeah,
okay.
It's big.
Sorry, I interrupted, but
no,
you're talking about speaking to your boss, developing this craft.
Yeah, and I had the inkling after a while that I'm starting to get good at this, and I was searching for my passion at the time, trying to figure out, like, what do I want to do with my life. I was still in engineering, and I just began to mentor people in public speaking, kind of start to share what I've been learning. And really, the first person I ever worked with was just a person at Toastmasters who was really shy, came from Russia, big accent, and just like was so closed off, but really wanted to, you know, really admired the Tony Robbins of the world. I know he saw in himself the potential, but didn't know how to get there. And so that was really my first project, my first experience, just helping somebody be a better version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I got addicted because that is such a fulfilling experience.
Well, and totally different story on your side.
Totally different story on my side. I mean, I met Michael at a Toastmasters meeting because I was taking on an ultra learning project. So on my side, I mean, public speaking was completely an accident. It was never something that I truly suffered from. but it was always something that I wish I were better at. Like, I was in the previous startup I worked in, I was invited to speak at a company and share a little bit of my story, and I did, and I had like I prepped like crazy, and it was terrible. Like, none of the jokes worked, and I would laugh by myself at the joke and then realize nobody was following me. It was horrible. And fast forward a few years later, and I want to take on this an intense ultra running project inspired by this guy Scott Young, who's a phenomenal ultra runner who wrote a book on it. And I was going to take on piano, so it could have been ultra piano.
Tell me a bit more about what ultra learning means exactly.
Yeah, ultra learning is basically a self-directed learning project where the goal is often going to be to learn to get to a level at a skill that most people won't touch, and in a very short amount of time. So Scott, for example, the author of Ultra Learning, he...
You see a bunch of these books on the walls. Like, a required reading for any of your clients?
Definitely, okay. Required reading also, because we're very honored to be a part of the book. So chapter 3 of Ultra Learning is a lot of our journey together through the World Champs, because we joined, basically, I meet Michael starting this project, and...
Sorry, go through the story. Maybe you would have got there anyway.
I think it's going to make sense this way. I meet Michael in my walking into a Toastmasters meeting, and I see him speak, and I was really blown away, particularly with his skill on the spot. And that what Michael mentioned earlier, this thing called table topics that they have at Toastmasters, which is basically you're thrown like a question, a sentence, something weird, anything. I think the first one I got was, I don't know, what's your favorite childhood memory? But it could be absolutely anything. And Michael walked up and just shared something that was so good to me. I just could not believe that he had not prepared it. I thought somebody was cheating. I asked the guy next to me. I'm like, what is happening right now? And so by the end of that, I said to myself, whatever that guy knows, I need to know. And I went up to him and I asked him, "Hey, would you help me out with this project I'm doing? I'm trying to learn how to be a better public speaker." And he said yes, very generously, having absolutely no idea just how much he was promising that day, because we ended up working an insane amount of hours together. Because just a week later, I discovered that there's such a thing as the World Championships of Public Speaking. That there are 30,000 people every year that compete in this worldwide, and it's starting like 10 days from that moment that I met Michael. And I still have that email where I send him like, "Hey dude," you might think, well, I didn't call him dude at the time. Dear Mr. Gant, I know like I'm a complete beginner, but do you think there's any chance that I could compete in this thing? And I needed like 6 qualifying speeches, and I had 10 days. So it was pretty intense. And I just like started with the ultra learning mindset of just going crazy and just doing almost a speech a day. And we won the qualifiers, and then we started winning. And the more we were winning, the more it made sense to work harder at it. And by the end of it, when we'd qualified for the semifinals.
So when you say we, were you guys talking together? Like, what does that mean? What, we as a team? Like, how does that work?
That's a good question. Michael was behind the scene. I was the one who was on stage. I was the one who was practicing. At the time, Michael worked at Hulu. And so he had a full-time job, and I would meet him at 6 a.m. at Hulu. And we would go in a conference room and just brainstorm ideas, and then he'd throw me out, and I'd have to go in front of audiences to like test everything out. But I say we because really quickly we really became a team in that.
Okay.
And although I was the one who had to go out and speak, all of the research, the crafting, we were two brains, truly.
Okay.
And what we discovered through this, the whole process, is that we worked truly remarkably well together. And more than anything, I had the same life-changing experience that Michael had had a few years before, in that because I was forced to go in front of audiences unprepared and pretend as though I were prepared, pretend that I had everything ready to go and I would have to deliver this perfect speech, even though I was the only one in the room who knew
that I just made it that morning.
That I just made it that morning. So I hadn't memorized, I just had a few points, maybe a joke I wanted to try out and an idea of how I wanted to end, but that's basically it. But I had to pretend, I had to show up and as if I knew everything, as if I were the future world champion. And that created an immense shift in how I felt as a speaker.
Interesting. Just want to ask you a question about that. So you said something that really sparked my curiosity, which goes back to the conversation we were having about alter egos. When you were going on stage, were you already envisioning that you were the champion? Like, was that something that you embodied, or were you just winging it? Was there something you were taking on, you're bringing that through you?
Yes and no. I was definitely not embodying the world champion mindset early on, because it truly was an impossible project to me. There was absolutely no reality in which I could make it even to like the semifinals. It was just not possible. I'd started Toastmasters like a week before this thing started, so it made no sense. But I did have to show up, and Michael really, really worked hard to help me with the mindset, because I kept telling him like, I'm not a good speaker yet, like I don't believe it. And he was like, you have to tell yourself that you're a good speaker. And it felt like it didn't work, but I would still go up embodying something much more than who I was. For sure.
Interesting.
I definitely, the moment the pressure turned on, I stepped into the character of a version of myself that was supremely, supremely confident, that deserved to be on that stage, that owned the stage, held the stage, and until that very last moment when I walked back and sat down and turned back into myself, there is definitely some alter ego shifting happening.
Cool. Yeah.
When he got to the semifinals, when he qualified, and he had to now prepare another speech for the semifinal round, he started workshopping something completely new. But as he'd go test out this new speech, he would get introduced by the club members as, oh, we have this special guest, we're so privileged to have someone who may very well be the future world champion of public speaking, so we are delighted, honored to be graced by his presence. And to have that type of introduction at a stage where Tristan had to start the process all over again and workshop very raw, early stage ideas, suddenly I think he began to learn a new skill, the skill of true, if he didn't embody it, if he was like, hey guys, I'm just practicing, I'm just like, this is early on, then you ruin it for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to give great feedback. They're not going to take it in that lens. He needed that feedback. It was the only way that he could make massive leaps in short amounts of time. So he'd had to go up there and kind of like, he's introduced as the world champion, and even though he doesn't have much, he went up with at least kind of a stone cold image of, okay, you know, I'm ready, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to tell him how I'm really feeling inside. And I think repeated instances of that on a daily basis started to shift the way he approached this, and probably a little bit of identity as well. If I'm going to be introduced this way, I might as well show up that way.
Yeah, part of reprogramming the subconscious mind is through repetition. So if you're, even if you didn't believe it at first, you tell yourself something enough times, you're going to make it true. Make it real.
Without a doubt. And you notice in like very speaking related, I would notice, because I had to stay in character the whole time, if I wanted great feedback, they had to believe it, right? So I had to stay in character regardless of the unraveling that would be happening in my mind. And I started noticing that people have a completely separate experience in the audience than I do. Right? There are moments where I'm completely unraveling in my mind and I'm losing myself, and I'm still there. I'm present and I'm there and I'm posturing, but there's part of my brain that's freaking out. And then I just have to find a way to recover and keep going as if everything were there for a reason the whole time. And I'm discovering that there's this shift that happens. There's this separation in between my experience and the audience's experience that's something that handicaps so many people who haven't experienced that firsthand. So many of our clients will come in the first time we're working together, and midway through a phenomenal speech, we'll stop and say, "Oh, guys, I'm so sorry. I was lost there. I'm so sorry." And immediately we'll stop everything. We'll turn to the audience, whoever's there, and say, "Raise your hand if you had even the slightest doubt that he was losing his," and nobody will ever notice. So starting to understand that and integrating that in your mindset, that I can be going through ups and downs, it doesn't matter. I still should stay in character. It's not necessarily going to hurt my performance and the end result, is very, very powerful and very liberating.
Yeah, and I think that can translate into life in general, where you know, you might feel like a failure, like in many areas, and think that everyone's noticing. Meanwhile, no one has any clue.
Everybody else is trying to figure it out as well.
Yeah, and you're just building that up in your head. But telling yourself that story is actually really taking away your own power.
Yes.
You know, and you're not as much as a failure, or whatever it is. And I'm just using failure as an example. You know, some people are self-conscious, some people, whatever it is. Most of the time, that story in your head, you're way blowing out of proportion. No one even really notices. So you're really, it's just a story you're telling yourself. Okay, so you get to the semifinals, you get to the finals, and you become the champion? What happens?
I don't become the champion.
You don't become the champion, okay.
No, I my real victory was 5 days before the semifinals, or 6 days before the semifinals. We threw away all of the work that we had done, everything. Michael managed to book me this speech on the morning of the sixth day, or day minus six, right? And I show up and I give this speech to 50 people.
Which was going to be my final dress rehearsal
okay. that we're doing.
This was going to be like, this is, I was stoked. I was really, really happy with what I had. And I gave this speech and like the whole time something felt off. And we leave, and as every single time, like, I give a piece of paper to everybody in the audience and I ask them to write down feedback. And we leave, and I have this pile of pieces of paper, 50 of them. And I'm going through them, and it's like, "Good luck for your championship. Like, yay." And like, "Hey, I had a great time. And like, you look really nice." Whatever. Like, "You seem like a nice guy." It was like, there's basically nothing, not one of them, not one out of 50 said, "Wow, that was impressive." Not one.
It was just encouraging, like, "Hey."
Just encouraging. Some of them were like, "Hey, it's you're really good storytelling." Or they were like pointing things out. Nobody said, "I was blown away." And there's no way you're going to win, you know, against like some of the top speakers in the world if it's not blowing somebody's mind, at least one person out of that. So I'm confronted with reality, and the only thing to do if I wanted to have a chance was throw it away, start from scratch. But I only have 5 days, and I only have 6 months of experience as speaking, right? And that started as a beginner. So I have 5 days to write a completely new speech, edit that speech, which is even tougher than writing it, memorize the whole thing, decide on like how am I going to use the stage, move around, all of this, and all of this has to happen within 5 days.
And how many people do you compete against, like in a semifinals? Just you against someone else? 10 people, okay.
Yeah.
And only one person goes through? Is that what
works?
Yeah,
it's sudden death from day one, from qualifiers all the way.
Only
it's
one.
Only the first,
oh, wow.
The first
pressure
goes out. Yes, super great. Mm-hmm. And I know that in the semifinal, I'm against like a guy who's been to the semifinals 9 times already.
Wow.
Like he's like he has it he knows how to get there. Like, there were a bunch of really solid players. That was maybe the worst moment of my life, and also followed by the best. Like, I had waves of anxiety that were just like, I never had that kind of anxiety. I did not know how to function anymore for a few hours until like Michael helped get me out of that funk, and we said, let's just do something. And so we just threw everything away, put a whiteboard out, and started back from zero, taking every single insight we'd ever learned. And I won the semifinal. It was insane. Like, we were in Canada in Vancouver. Like, we were walking the streets, we'd stop people, and I'd ask them, hey, can I try something on you? And I'd like try a bit of the speech, because I needed to get some form of feedback to know, like, is this working? And I needed to train under pressure so that the first time I delivered it in front of 500 people wasn't going to be the first time I was actually. So it was like, we were on this, it was insane. But that was, for me, that was the victory that I really genuinely felt I won.
How long was
everything
speech?
At that point? It's a 7.5 minute
okay,
speech.
Okay, so you're speaking for quite a while, right?
You're speaking for.
And did you keep the same speech into the finals?
No, so the
you switched it again.
Friday semifinals, or Thursday semifinals, Friday finals.
Oh,
and you have to have
back to back,
and you have to show up with two speeches.
Okay.
So that was the biggest thing that.
So did you stack your best for the semis just to make sure you got into the finals? Is that the strategy where you felt stronger?
So that's what got the anxiety away on that day where I was dying. Because everybody says, or everybody who spoke with me said, use your best speech. And your best speech is the one that got you to qualify for the semifinals. That's the speech you want to use for the semifinals. Because, man, if you can make it to the finals, that's huge already. So put everything on your side. So I had initially planned that. It's like, okay, that speech going in the semifinals. So the speech I was writing, the speech I bombed with in front of those 50 people, that was the speech for the finals. So suddenly I throw it away and I'm like, I don't have a speech for the finals. And the finals is in front of 3,000 people live streamed.
And you wing that one? Or you use the...
Well, that's the thing. I'm like, I am not going on that stage and winging and like and just wasting everybody's time. I don't want to be remembered. I've done this extraordinarily remarkable project, right? Like maybe one of the most intense, insane projects of my life. I am not going to be remembered as the guy who bombed on stage. Like, yeah, remember that dude? Yeah, we could tell that he'd only been speaking for 6 months. It was terrible. So that was the panic. I was like, this is going to be there forever, because that goes on YouTube. Like, it's done. You're out there. So the thing that saved me was switching them around. I was like, okay, who cares? I'm gonna find a way to do something for the semifinals. And if by a miracle I win, then I'm gonna have this speech that I've given 1,000 times, and I'm gonna be able to give that one in the finals. So when I walked on the finals, I was supremely confident, and I had a blast. And then I lost.
In retrospect, would you flip them back if you could do it again? Would you do it the other way?
I wouldn't change a thing.
Wouldn't change a thing. Yeah.
I would. In retrospect, I would do the. I would change the whole thing, because we.
Well, now you're experienced. So now you have all this.
Exactly. And there's something annoying to me with competitive speeches, is that because they're competitive, because, you know, 15 seconds in a competitive speech, you can tell a whole story. Like, it could be something absolutely key and fit. So every word is worked on. I knew every single comma, every pacing. I knew when people would laugh because I tried it on people so many, like, everything. But, and you have to turn all the knobs up just a little bit too much to make sure that the judges who are somewhere in the audience are going to pick up on, like, oh, he's doing this well. So to me, it comes off a little bit off. That's not how I speak today at all. That's not what I teach.
It's more acting almost. Or you're just so memorized.
Overacting.
It's overacting. Where it's not flowing, which what you guys do more now is like...
Well, it's flowing, but it's not authentic, right? It's not a... Like today, if we're working with someone on a speech, the ultimate, the level we want to get them to is where if 5 minutes before their speech, their 30-minute keynote speech, someone were to come up and say, hey man, you only have 15 minutes, they'd say, okay, no problem. Or, hey, can you speak for an hour? Okay, no problem. Because in their brain, they're so clear on what their landmarks are, what the pillars are of their speech, what the stories that are going to go behind these pillars and help push them forward. They're just so clear on what the stories are and what the pillars are that they don't need to memorize it.
Mm.
And then they can walk up and be super present in the moment and allow for spontaneity. Be real, like sense what's happening, and that's when the best ideas come out. But if you're competing and you're terrified that, you know, you just want to win and you want to take risks, but not too many. You want to take very calculated risks. And so that's where 99.9% of every competitor at the high level walks up knowing every word, every breath, everything. And that's, if I were to do it again, which I most likely won't, I would want to go in and just take everybody by surprise by showing up and being just so raw and real that it would be very surprising to watch.
Okay. Amazing. I got two more questions before we dive into ultra speaking, because I want to ask you guys about your methodology and how you guys do things differently. First, did you guys do any like crazy confidence building tactics where you have to go out in public? I know like stories of guys wanting to speak to go lie on the floor in the lineup in like a Tim Hortons or a coffee shop and talk to people. Any kind of crazy stunts like that you guys pulled in the beginning to really just break that ice for you guys when it came to speaking?
Tristan would probably remember it more than me, because I was the guy that's like, hey, you should probably go out in public and do this with your shirt off, and I gotta go to work.
Good luck.
Call me.
One of the funnest experiences, like everything I did, I filmed in order to be able to review if I had interesting feedback. And so one of the most fun parts of the whole project was from 6 a.m. to 6:15 a.m. when we would review myself bombing or saying stupid things and fumbling. And we would just, it would be like a 5 or 7 minute speech. And we'd pause every 5 seconds because I would be dying of embarrassment and laughter. It was really fun. But what I did, I committed that if, regardless of who it was, regardless of the circumstance, if somebody asked me, can I see your speech, I would deliver it on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
That was terrifying. And that, so I, weirdly enough, like one of the scariest of all of my renditions was in front of my best friend and his boss who were visiting, and who said, oh, I'd love to see your speech. And I was like, okay, here it goes. And I didn't know it well, and it was very, very early in the process, so I was not comfortable winging anything. And that was terrifying. But then I went, like, I was taking improv to help with the whole process, and twice I delivered my speech in front of my whole improv class. And it was horrific.
So no extracurricular stunts, though. None of the, like, these are all like on the spot type stuff, but in speaking context. So they know you do have to do anything to build confidence. Where, like, you know where I think this comes from? People tell me when they're building confidence to talk to girls, where they would just put themselves in these awkward situations where would
and
then
find a way out.
And find a way out. Anything like that in your training?
I mean, the whole process where his script would have deliberate empty space.
Just waiting for someone to react?
No. Like rather than writing a 7 minute speech in the script, we would have written a 2.5 minute speech.
Mm-hmm.
So we know the intro, we know we want to hit this detail in the middle, and we know the end. But what happens to him and the characters here and here, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So Tristan, the task that I would give him back in the day is like, oh, just find out when you're doing it.
Hmm.
See what your brain comes up with in the moment. So he'd have to go in front of audiences pretending to be the future world champion, knowing that there's these empty spots in his script. That's where he's going to go up and play off as they're real and rehearsed and prepared.
Hmm.
And that's when I think he really discovered for both of us this incredible power of the brain under pressure, and that some phenomenal ideas came out of just saving space, saving empty space for spontaneity.
So I think from the outside, and even when I tell the story, it's hard. I sometimes forget just how insanely intense it was. But it's really, it is what you're saying it is. Except I'm actually doing it. So it's like, imagine I'm trying to build up confidence to speak to my dream girl, and I'm going to do all these exercises and talk to random people in the street and all that. What I was doing in a way was the same thing. I'm going to put myself in the weirdest situation, but I have to do it in front of my dream girl. Mm. Like, if I lose, I lose a lot.
Okay.
And that, so that's what was happening. Like, I remember one time I went to speak in front of an audience I'd never spoken to, and in the audience were two people who were, to me, like, very, very important that I impress. One of them was the wife of a past world champion who had been very involved in him getting to where he was, and she was going to give me feedback. And the other one was a past president of Toastmasters Worldwide. And so I had booked this way ahead of time. It's very hard to get that. And I have this incredible opportunity. And I am sitting in my car, sweating bullets, panicking because I don't have a speech. And it's 15 minutes before. 15 minutes before, I do not have a speech. I don't have anything coherent. I have nothing to talk about for 7 minutes. And I call Michael, which I usually never do, off, like, you know, say, Michael has a life. But I call Michael and I'm like, dude, I'm dying. Like, I don't know what... I have been trying to find something. I have nothing. I'm truly panicking. I only have 15 minutes. What do we do? And Michael says, listen, man, I'm grabbing dinner right now. So I'm going to finish my order. Grab my food, I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Don't worry, it's going to be fine. And he hangs up the phone, and I was like, what? And so for 5 minutes, I'm panicking, like, and with a mix of, like, panic of, like, how, what is happening? Why is this guy not understanding the what's happening? But on the other hand, trusting that, okay, if he says we can do this in 10 minutes, like, I'm going to trust that we can. And during those 10 minutes, we're just talking the thing out, and then we finally, like, come up with, like, 4 points of, like, okay, it's going to be this guy, like, this is the message you're trying to come across. Okay, this guy's going to fall in love here, and this is going to happen. Like, we're, like, trying to find something that kind of makes sense. And then I walk in with this thing, like, so half-baked, but I wanted to try on, and I wanted to try out an idea. I really wanted to try out the Fight Club twist of, like, the whole time it was the same person, and, like, me and someone else. So I tried this whole thing out. And the funny thing is that as a great honor, at the end, the wife of the former world champion was the one who would give my evaluation in front. Because in Toastmasters, there is a speech that follows the speech, and it's someone who's going to come up and evaluate. And so I give this thing, and I've never been prouder in my entire life, because I was about to die 15 minutes before, and I managed to give this speech. And honestly, I thought I did a pretty remarkable job for having nothing, right?
Yeah.
And she walks up and she says, wow, I've got to say, I don't know how to put this, but I understood nothing. And she's like, none of this makes sense to me. And she took it literally. So she did not understand the twist. And she's giving me this full 3 minute speech in front of 75 people, telling me how stupid I am, basically, and how none of this made sense. And the subtext was, like, I really don't understand why you're the guy who's going to the semifinals right now. At least that's how I took it. But everybody in the audience had understood it. And so everybody was, like, looking around awkwardly. And I and at the end, like, people came to me and was like, I totally understand. But that,
what did you
that
think
process
was there a takeaway for you?
Oh yeah, the takeaway.
Did you feel disappointed that she didn't get it, or did you still feel confident? Yeah, you didn't care at that
point.
Didn't
do anything. Mm-hmm. I was just, I wished I hadn't lost that opportunity to get feedback from someone who was at that level, because obviously since she didn't get anything, none of what she told me had served me at all. So I kind of, it sucked that I missed that, but it only made me more resilient. It only made me more confident in my ability to just show up and pull something off like that with confidence. There's something really strange. It's hard to imagine when you're not there, but standing in front of a lot of people who are completely silent and having to own that space without knowing what you're going to say next, it's a crazy experience. It's a crazy experience, but I think that marked the beginning of all of this learning seeping out into the rest of my life. Because when I walked out of that, I felt different.
Okay.
And I had booked a speech a day at that point. So every day I was in front of a new audience, basically doing the same. Not as extreme as that, but close. And suddenly I'm walking around in the world with this confidence that I can be put on the spot, that you could ask me anything at any moment in any environment, and my brain would be able to come up with something.
Mm-hmm.
And this was Michael's whole theory, was that this is not surprising in any way, because we all have that capacity. We just don't believe it as soon as we're put in a certain circumstance. Right? We were coaching someone this morning who has gone through the same exact realization, and he was sharing, he's like, it's no different than having a conversation with a friend, and I'm never at a loss for words when I'm having a conversation with a friend. So I'm always capable of coming up with something, even if I don't know what's coming next. And he shared, he's, as I'm speaking right now, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I know it's going to make sense. That realization and understanding how to transfer having a conversation with friends and that confidence, that ease you, that you don't even, true confidence is that you don't think about it. You don't need to think, I'm going to be confident. It's just there. How do you put that into a situation where the pressure is high? That changes a lot.
Amazing. Interesting. Okay, so before we get into that, one more question, because we're going to get into the ultra learning, ultra speaking, which I guess came from ultra learning. That's where the name comes from. Now it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
In your process of learning, were there any breakthrough moments that really stood out, like tips or tricks or something that you did that changed your perspective on speaking as you were learning? So before you had this big aha, when you were starting out, what were some of the first things that really made a big difference for you?
When I was starting out speaking, the first thing that made a phenomenal impact was noticing how much the end mattered.
Okay.
So when I would get up on stage, get asked a question, I would notice how there were certain people that would give kind of lackluster answers, and I'm like kind of lost in what they're saying, but then at the end they would find a way to just end confidently. They wouldn't say anything brilliant at the end, but they would end with confidence, and I found myself feeling like, oh, that was good, that was great. And it's like the realization that when someone is speaking, if you're in the audience, you're kind of in the car with them, and they're the driver and they're driving, and they might weave left, right, they might get into an accident, but they're completely in control. So even if they got into the accident, even if they took a wrong turn, like, you're not there at that wrong turn, and you're moving with them,
mm-hmm.
which means that when they get to the destination, where are you? You're at the destination with them. So I noticed that the people who arrived at the end of their speaking, those that ended strong, that ended with a sense of confidence, and there were like a few vocal techniques that they would do, like they'd say, you know, and that's the end of my speech, and their voice would drop a little. Or maybe they'd slow down and they say, and that's the end of my speech. They would just kind of hold this confident facade. And everyone received them as being more confident, more thoughtful. And I was like, huh. So I started going up there, answering questions all over the place. But the one thing I began to focus on is like, okay, as I'm approaching the end, just like say it and mean it. Slow down, like add some pauses, but like say it in a confident way. And suddenly I was being perceived as if I were saying things that were more brilliant than they were, that were more intelligent than they were. And it's all about, and so we researched this recently and found this thing called the peak end rule, which is essentially like a science experiment around human perception. And long story short, they noticed that like people don't really remember experiences in their totality. You go on a vacation, you don't remember every day of the vacation. You remember essentially two main points. The peak, the like highest moment of the vacation, the most emotional, and the end. And so how do you exploit that in speaking? Well, you can, 50% of it is just the end. Have a good end, you'll leave a great lasting impression. So now when I speak, all of my, like in my mind, I'm going, okay, unless I ended strong, I'm not done. My job isn't done speaking. I'm going to end my sentences. You'll see it right now. I'm prepping everyone. And it doesn't matter even what I say. What matters is I know I'm approaching, so I slow down. Stop speaking. I look confident as fuck.
I love it. So do you think this can translate into a regular conversation, like when someone's talking to a girl, or like, you know, you're talking at work and you just... I find sometimes myself, it's like you're ending a conversation, you don't know how to end it, you're babbling on, okay, maybe I'll call you, I'll follow up later, and then it's like, if you end like, so we're going to talk next week on Tuesday. Have a great day. Something like that. Do you think that would like...
Without a doubt. Or, I mean, the opposite is so true. Think about it. We've all had a conversation like that, where everything goes fine, and then you have like this awkward ending. And that's all you're left with. You hang up the phone and... You're like, ooh, that felt weird.
Right?
That
I'm just thinking off. About that now. I'm gonna have some like pre-written down endings, how to end a phone call strongly, end a conversation strongly.
And ending strong is more about intonation and energy than anything else. The words don't matter. You just stop and you say, okay, bye. it's just anything very clear. Clear cut, intentional.
Okay.
And that's the energy you're left with.
Yeah, 'cause I have some single friends and they're like that first second call, and it's like they don't get a call back. And it's like you gotta end that conversation on the right note, not let it dribble off. Okay. All right. So how about for you, Tristan? Any in the early days, things that stood out to you that really made a difference? Awareness around tip, trick, technique, anything like that you can share?
There are many.
What stands out the most? What's the first one that comes to mind that you really had that, okay, now I'm getting something here. This is going to change my game.
Well, I think storytelling was game-changing for me. In speaking, understanding that if you're just talking about a concept, people won't listen.
It's super boring.
Yeah, the way we think about it is people ignore advice, but listen to stories. So, if you're going to go speak, you must have something to say, right? Otherwise, you probably shouldn't be speaking. So, if you have something to say, how do you get it across effectively? Well, the best way to get it across is to make people feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And you make people feel something by bringing them on a journey. And it can be an anecdote, it could be a story, it's mostly stories, but it could be a case study, it could be somebody else's story. There's so many options there, but one of the biggest things that changed it all for us was really going deep in the study of storytelling. And one of the biggest things that came out of that, or one of the common mistakes that most people make when they tell stories is to make themselves the hero of their own story. And that's a big no-no. And I made that mistake on day one, day two, day three, day four, until Michael had told me enough times that it was not okay. And you know, an example in one of my speeches was about conquering the fear of other people's opinions. And the way I told the story initially was, you know, I was suffering from this and this happened to me, and then suddenly I decided I'm going to do this differently, and here's what I did. And so I start sharing everything that I did, and I'm the hero, I'm the master mentor, sharing all of the key insights. And what we realized was, well, Michael kept telling me this, and then I pay attention in other people, because so many people make this mistake, and I'm realizing, oh, there's something off-putting about a know-it-all on stage. And when you switch things around and you go from being the mentor to being the student who's discovering it for himself within the story, and you bring in a mentor, now it changes everything, because now you're part of the audience. Let's all learn from this other person who has no skin in the game. And so my grandmother came in, and she became really the central character of that speech. And like, my grandmother's quite the character. She's a French smoking, you know, and I exaggerated her a little bit, so she became like a tattooed French smoking motorcycle riding grandma with this great French accent who would take me on this adventure. And so that shift to story was huge. Really
amazing. Amazing. Thank you. That's some really good stuff, really good tips that I'm gonna already thinking in my own personal experiences how I can shift my stories around and endings as well.
Okay, so you guys figured something out that led to Ultra speaking, because I guess the initial intention wasn't to be speaking coaches, but after you you had this experience together, you decided that you can teach other people a method or a process to unlock their genius within, and everyone can do this. And yeah, tell me about it. Let's don't let me tell it. You guys tell it.
We started coaching. Our first client was a professional speaker who had a.
So how did you decide to coach people? Did it just happen?
I was doing it on the side. Tristan was one of my clients. I'm still waiting for my royalties check. So I was really into it, and so Tristan and I were working an exorbitant amount, but on the side I was still working with Alex on his confidence. I was working with a woman named Hannah on like improv and storytelling too, and so I began to sort of have the first taste of it. And so after the World Championships, we knew we wanted to work together in some capacity, and Tristan had a small business that he was running. He was doing this project for that, and so he was thinking maybe he could bring me into that, and so we were just exploring like, how do we continue having fun together after this project's over. And so one of the first things that happened actually was I was working at Hulu, and I started doing more Hulu based trainings
for, like, what's Hulu?
Hulu's you know what Hulu is? Oh, note to the Hulu listeners out there, expansion to Toronto. It's like it's Netflix but for live TV, for TV shows.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I've heard of it.
Green
yeah.
logo.
I've heard of it. Yeah, yeah. Hulu. Mm-hmm.
So I was working at a company. Let's call it what's a Canadian company?
Canadian Tire.
Canadian Tire. So I was working for like a Canadian Tire tech startup, and. I was trying to
Muse is a Canadian company.
Exactly.
You have a tech startup.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going better.
That's Canadian Tire.
And
lacking innovation.
I remember how I wanted to do more of this, and in my like, I'd have this extraordinary life where we're flying to Vancouver for the World Championships, and then I'd come back and no one would know about it, and I'm doing my 9 to 5 as a project manager on a tech team. So I was thinking, how do I make my life better? How do I mix these two worlds? So one of the first things I did was I started teaching more at Hulu, just like being the public speaking guy. I'd hold these like small classes, I'd take my team through certain exercises, and I remember I would bring Tristan in, and so we would start teaching together, and that was kind of Tristan's foray into now applying what he's learned, but And the crazy part of it is like, you know, now he's a world champion finalist. You know, he has the authority, but he's doing the same process all over again. I'm going, here, you guys, I brought in a special guest, world champion finalist. He's going to lead a few exercises for us on speaking. And so now Tristan is doing the same thing. He doesn't really know. He's never taught this craft before. He's just learned it. But he jumped in. And so I think how this evolved is it's very much like improv style. I led a little bit more in the beginning because I had a tiny bit more experience in it. And then Tristan would support. And then over time, as we got more familiar and we started seeing speaking in two different perspectives, I'm sure you can see it already, like Tristan speaks very differently than I do. Mm-hmm. We have different energies. So now our worldview of what is great speaking is different. And so as Tristan's confidence goes up, he starts leading and starts doing certain things. And I'm looking, I'm going, oh, this is cool. And so now I'm starting to like, you know, want to improve and get better. And we just kept riffing on each other and on the process until very quickly I realized, like, you know what, this is the life I wanna lead. And we felt like we were onto something, because very early on when we were teaching, people would come up to us and be like, this is life changing.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew it because it had changed our lives, but we didn't understand the magnitude of like what it was that we were actually doing for people. And at first we were just teaching them the techniques, but more and more we realized that effective speaking is not, it's not the root, it's the symptom, it's the result. What is effective speaking? What's a result of something deeper underneath? Mm-hmm. And so we started wondering, what is it underneath? You know, and there's so many things. There's like how comfortable are you being yourself?
Mm-hmm.
How funny are you? How quirky are you? And how willing are you to be all those things under pressure?
What do you think restricts that for people? Do you think it's they're a product of their environment where they sort of repress their true self over time, and that what you guys are doing is allowing them to tap back in, that getting to a flow state, removing that those parts of the brain,
yeah,
that are trying to sort of like hold us back,
yeah,
and just like bypassing, yeah, it. So
I mean, what do you you did one of our trainings. You were there for 2 full days, and you saw how people, as time,
you know,
went
I
on,
saw it, and you know, I expressed it to you guys that, you know, this is not speaking training. There's way more to it than just about speaking. It's a personal development. It's like breaking through barriers. It's you could see people transform. I saw it. It's in a couple of days, and I was like, okay, like I want to learn how to facilitate this. I want to learn how to incorporate this. I'd love to do this on psychedelics, maybe even, and see what happens. I'm just joking, but I'm actually not really joking. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's so much potential to. I saw the potential in it, and maybe not even potential. See, like the product right in front of me, like. Potential means what it can be, but I already saw it was already something.
So what do you think, as you watched, you know, 7 other men go from point A to point B, you start wondering, why were they in point A in the first place? What was it that's holding people,
mm-hmm,
back from getting to the destination?
Well, I think a lot of it is lack of confidence based on stories they've told themselves or experiences in their life that have made them, their ego, to protect them from being embarrassed, being wrong, being judged. But when they let go of that sort of barrier and just flow with it, they realize that they can naturally just be themselves.
And that people will like them when they're that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was another thing that I guess stood out. There's a lot of positive reinforcement because,
yeah,
it wasn't even just like positive reinforcement, like all those letters you got because people thought you were a nice guy with a cute beard and blue eyes. You know, it was actually, people were saying things that were vulnerable, that were from the heart, that you could tell was very authentic. And I think seeing people's authentic self, more than even just the person on the stage, it created a dynamic in the group where people were connecting by people going up, feeling a little bit out of their comfort zone, sharing authentically, and everyone was like resonating with, like, everyone was listening deeply. So there's so many layers to what I saw happening. It's active listening, it's connecting with people, it's sharing vulnerably, it's
especially because it was a bunch of guys, you know, opening up, you know, some tears were shed, you know, it was a lot. So, but people probably have no idea what we really mean. So I guess my next question to clarify is, what about your process is different than a regular speaking coach? Like, what did you guys figure out, and why have you found success with it?
Well, man, regular speaking coaches, and I haven't studied this in depth, but I wouldn't be surprised if more than 80% of the people out there coaching public speaking or communication fall into this category. I will almost guarantee that they're going to work on tactics, and they're going to work on what you look like as a speaker. And what we found out is that all of that is worth nothing if you don't work with the core. Mm. That more than anything, how you move your hands, what you do with your eye contact, your vocal variety, how you move, how you feel in your body, and if you look like a confident speaker on stage, how you're holding the space, all of those things are consequences of something. And if you hit the root, and if you change the root, then all of those things take care of themselves. Because what's wonderful for us with speaking is that this is a skill that everybody already has. We've all started learning how to speak around one, and we've spent our lives doing it. So it's incredible for us because we get to play with people. And they're coming in, and if they were to see another coach, the coach would look at him and say, "Hi, look, you're saying a lot of a lot of ahs, so we're going to have to work on getting rid of that. Clearly, you're a little bit hunched down, and we want to pull those shoulders back. So remember, every time you walk on the stage, pull your shoulders back a little bit. Imagine there's a string pulling the top of your head, and your vocal variety, we're going to have to work on we're going to have to work on that. And eye contact, you have to look at every third person 4 seconds if you want to meet when you're making a point. All of that is bullshit. You can learn that way, and you're going to eventually look somewhat like a confident, good speaker. But number one, you're not going to feel like one. So, you know, best case scenario, you feel like a terrible fraud, an imposter, right? But more likely, it's going to feel so artificial and robotic. Now, if I take that same person and I work on their mindset, how trusting are they that they're going to kill it when they open their mouth? And that there's a lot of things that go into that. And then how do I build the tool set, but the core tool set? So if I vary, like let's take a very simple example. If I play with your energy and I vary your energy with all kinds of games, one of them being Conductor that you've seen, where I'm going to force you to go up high in the range.
So Conductor is like, he'll be standing there and this will be like a level of how loud or how much energy you should speak with. And as you're speaking, he's going to play with it on the spot. So you don't know what's going to happen next. And as you're speaking, he's sort of controlling you like a puppeteer sort of thing.
Yes. So I'm controlling your energy and I'm making you go up in energy. And the only way you can like go up in energy is just channel emotion. You got to be like super happy and start screaming. And then we bring you down. And suddenly the only way to fill slow space is being real, authentic, coming up with something real. And then if you add to Conductor other games that are going to start building your confidence, like showing how quick you're, and it's all about showing you how good you already are, right? Showing you how quick your brain actually is. Showing you how to think in analogies. And that's something everybody can do, but let me show you what it feels like to embody that on the stage. And we're bringing all of these things together, and suddenly, and this can last like literally only 20 minutes, we're taking that same person who was hunched down, who was using ums and ahs and avoiding eye contact, and we've changed completely how they feel. And now suddenly they feel much more confident. They're much more at ease slowing down, taking pauses. That gets rid of ums and ahs. confidence that changes your posture. Nobody's confident like this. If you feel confident, your body changes, right? And all of these things will suddenly impact everything that people are trying to work on. So a lot of people still come to us for that, but we never work on that. We always work on the core first. And then really at the very, very end, there's still things left to tweak, then we may play around with it. But most of the time, seeing something else, it's only a symptom of something in the core that you aren't taking on. And if something's holding you back in speaking, that same thing is holding you back everywhere else in your life.
So what's some of the side effects you've seen of someone started working on speaking with you that's changed other aspects of their life? Have you had any stories like that where people have their relationship changed, or they got a promotion at work, you know, or maybe they weren't coming for that, or the relationship, like something.
I mean,
stuff like that?
Our main work, if there's one thing I think, and Tristan would have a different answer, my main objective to help people with is to prepare less. I want people to show up more unprepared in life.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking is an avenue for that. And I think that the only way we can help people to show up more unprepared is to prove to them or help them realize that in the moment when they are spontaneous, when they aren't thinking, when they have no idea how anything's going to work out, if in that moment they do well, they surprise themselves and they realize that, oh wait, that was cool. If they build that muscle and that skill, then suddenly, first, it starts happening in speaking. So a client we're working with is coming back to us saying, hey, I'm getting asked to speak on this, and I don't even fret anymore. I just know I'm going to show up and I'm going to do fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with speaking, but I think it evolves into everything else.
Yeah, I can see how it easily can translate into becoming more of a go-getter or taking risks, saying, I'm just going to go for it. I'm just going to try this thing because it's not as bad as I thought. I've realized this in my own experience with ice baths. The first time someone does an ice bath, they're usually so scared. They go in and they love it. They feel amazing. They're like, oh, wow, that wasn't such a big deal. I'm like, yeah, how do you apply that to everything else in your life? When you're so scared, you do it, and then it's not that big of a deal. And the other thing that I think that I picked up on there is developing that intuitive sense. We trust your intuition to sort of just make that relationship. So when you're put on the spot to speak, you start just making connections and your brain starts working in an interesting way, specifically with your method. And you're just trusting. And that trust, the intuitive force within you, once you can build that, you can use it in other areas of your life.
Yes.
To make decisions, to sort of like pick up feelings on people. I think it all works together.
Yeah.
I think you're a particularly good embodiment of that, of what we preach. Like you live your life very much that way. And I think what do our clients tend to, what kind of results they tend to get? Well, it's feeling like you feel. Every time I ask you, like, what are you going to do about this project? You're like, we'll see, man. Just putting that out in the universe, staying open and moving forward. And I know without a doubt that all the answers are going to come.
Mm.
And that's when you have that in speaking, then it starts coming in your life. Then suddenly you are more spontaneous anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then if your boss shows up and you sense something important, well, you're going to speak up and you're going to say it. And that may be the difference between staying at your level and coming up in leadership. If there's a girl at the bar and you hesitate because you're not sure what's going to happen if you speak or how the conversation should go all the way down the road, you're not going to say a word. If you're confident in that, you might go say hi.
And I think that this applies to, like, even for networking, right? If you can walk around a room and just have these open conversations, you don't know what you're going to talk to that person about. So it can work for relationships, it can work for income when it comes to networking and building a better network. And then, like we talked about too, it's like that confidence, that trusting in yourself, believing in yourself. I think when you sort of have that energy flowing through you, you're going to be healthier, you're going to be stronger, you're going to be a more resilient person all around. So I think, you know, we can call it speaking, ultra speaking training, but I think it's really a tool for so much more that I'm really excited
to get more into. So let's talk a bit about that. You guys got a book coming out. You guys have a game out. Tell me what the inspiration, the intention behind those, and why you created these things, other than, you know, great marketing tool and great networking tool.
Yeah.
What was the intention? Like, what did you put into those books and the game?
Chapter one of the book is it talks about a guy who walks over a plank that's set between two tall buildings. And he walks over the plank, and he runs over the plank, and he cartwheels over the plank. And these kids who are watching this acrobat do this phenomenal thing, kids are flipping out. They're going, this is incredible. And then, of course, he does his final stunt, brings the plank down, and has them all run on the plank on the ground, and they all obviously do it. And he gives them this life lesson of, look, there's no difference in the plank. It's the same plank on the ground, same plank up there, but what does change is when I put it up there, your perception of it changes. And we find that in speaking, it's the same thing, right? When people speak, they're just walking on a plank. We can all do it. But when people speak under pressure, when it's a boardroom or a client or a wedding speech, suddenly it feels like the plank is getting elevated all the way up there. And so we naturally, because of the pressure, walk differently across the plank. We naturally are more cautious. We're naturally thinking about all the things that could go wrong.
Yeah, I just have an interesting question. You might not know the answer, but do stress hormones impact your brain's functionality when it comes to speech?
Yeah. So,
because you don't need to speak when you got to run away from something. Because
exactly.
If you're stressed, it's like
it. So in a very low dose, it's excellent. You're going to be sharper. So that's why you want that little peak of adrenaline before a meeting, before going on stage, before anything important. Very valuable. But if you go too high and you trigger that threshold at the top, then your prefrontal cortex turns off.
And then you're screwed.
No access to short-term memory, because why would you need short-term memory if you're about to be eaten by a lion? And no access to creativity.
Oh.
So that feeling of people are talking to me and I hear the words, but I can't even interpret them, or I'm completely like not there. That's because you've triggered that up there. Yeah,
I know people that's happened to and can never stand in front of people for the rest of their life. Like as kids doing a speech in front of their class, and it was just like trauma.
A lot of the people who come to us have that story. That's how I imagine, or I talk about the difference between most people and the naturals. Let's say people who feel like they're not good speakers and the naturals. The difference happens in that classroom. Most of the time it's a classroom, most of the time it's 14 to 20, like 3. Those are the ages.
Yeah,
it's older, because younger, maybe it doesn't hit as much, or maybe you're not as self-conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly when things matter a little bit more and you're put in front of an audience, the first time you have a bad experience, that's okay. But if it's bad enough, the second time you have to speak, you lose control of your brain beforehand. Mm-hmm. Oh no, I don't want to have that bad experience again. Oh no, I hope it doesn't go bad. I'm scared. Then you start, oh my God, I'm feeling anxiety. Oh, my hands are sweaty. I'm sweating. People are going to notice. And you enter into that loop. Then you have that terrible, terrible experience. And then, for the rest of your life, I am going to avoid speaking at any cost.
And this training is just building that sort of prep. It's like the ice bath. It's like when I go
to
the ice bath now,
I
built this system up through practice that now I go in, it's no problem. There's no fear, I don't feel that cold anymore. It still gets cold, but I see it as with practice, you start, you know, I guess reprogramming or building new neural pathways in the brain.
And your focus. So the average person will look at the ice bath and think, "Shit, that's going to be cold. It's going to hurt. I don't want to go in. I'm already cold just thinking about it." They're going to psych themselves out before going in. When you look at an ice bath, you think about how good you're going to feel after it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're used to it, you're like, I know that this experience is going to be a thrill to me. Right? There may be a hard moment getting in, or there may be X, Y, or Z, but that's the difference between the natural. He has the same experience as the other person in school, but for him, it's a thrill. That first time is like, wow, this went well. This was fun. And now I'm seeking out
and you
more
can change
opportunities.
That.
You can change it
can
at
change
any
that.
Moment in time.
Yeah.
You can change it. But you need to experience what it feels like to have a great time speaking.
Because I've seen at that weekend together some people who are afraid of speaking, they had that breakthrough on the spot where they were able to break that pattern. And you know, I think they got emotional about it. Everyone felt it. It was like, wow, you know, you saw some of it. But the first time they got up there, it was like, you know, they had that memory coming back again. But by the third or fourth time they got up, it was just like amazing. So anyway, sorry, the book. So Plank, I love it. Great story. So it's an ebook or it's a printed book?
Yeah, it's a short read. You can find it on, we'll create a page for you, ultraspeaking.com/geo. We'll get the book download for you. And it's really about whether you're about to walk on a plank or you're about to enter in an ice bath. The worst part of it is the anticipation. And in speaking, it's the same thing. Everyone's worst part are the moments before. And we see it all the time. We put people on the spot, we ask them a question, and you could see just how much they struggle internally. But then once they start speaking, everything calms down. Once you're in the ice bath, okay, it's not as bad as I thought, I'm doing it. And there's no real one bad moment in the ice bath. But before you get in, the thought of it is so much more painful. So our entire methodology, we've really nicknamed speak before you think. Because the thinking is the problem. The thinking brain is the reason that we fear the plank, that we fear the ice bath, that we fear the speaking. And the longer we think before we speak, which we've all been trained to do, the worse it's going to be, the more painful it's going to be. So our philosophy is, if you start speaking, you're going to find flow. You're going to find new inspiration. You're going to figure out the answer along the way, the same way that an artist will throw paint on a canvas and then get inspired by what's on the canvas and decide to go in different directions. And by the end, the artwork was never imagined. The artwork evolved naturally through moments of inspiration. That's how we see speaking. The most important part of speaking for us is you got to get started, even if you don't feel confident, even if you're scared of it. Once you're on a path, you'll get moments of inspiration. You'll pivot. And in the moment, there's this intuitive power that we all have that makes our speaking great. And if we can just get to that moment quicker, then we'll learn so much faster that we already know how to speak. We already are good at it. The biggest problem is we're in our thinking brain too much. So how do we get out of it? Well, let's speak before we think.
You know what? I wish someone created like some sort of card game or something that allow us to practice on a regular basis. There you go. Oh my God. That's called instant manifestation.
Yes.
So you guys create a card game. This is, I guess we played an earlier version for this fancy looking box here. I'll show it to you guys up here. Tell me about the card game. So how does the card game work and how does it train my brain to do the things that I want it to do, which is perform better and execute speaking at a higher level and all the other stuff we talked about for the last hour or so?
Well, the game is a series of exercises or a series of different types of games you can play, and we use this daily in our coaching. It's really the reason we created a game, as you were asking earlier, is just because after a while of coaching, we realized, wait a second, I think this is a game. I think we've just created a game without doing it on purpose. Because what we found that was the most effective way to learn how to free your thinking, free yourself from your thinking mind, is through games. Because you can't think your way through it, so you have to experience your way. You have to enter presence and flow, and one of the best ways to do that is playing games that force you into that. And so one of the games we have is it's called Analogies. Right, and you've played this game, and on these cards I have email is like, or texting is like, the future is like, and over here I have topics, all kinds of topics. And so what we'll do is a few people.
You
want to
try a few? You want to do an example?
Let's do an example.
Be a guinea pig.
Let me open this for you.
Maybe Michael could be the guinea pig.
Yeah, and the purpose of the game, most of our exercises are on putting you in situations that you can't think your way through.
Very good, strong packaging. So in case
excellent packaging.
There you go.
There you go.
You know, putting you in moments that you can't prepare, having you start sentences that you don't know what you're speaking about. We're trying to put you in situations where you must solely rely on your subconscious mind.
Okay, so let's do a few here. So you're
let's do a few.
You're gonna prompt, and then
yeah, let's start with a prompt. One of the other games, and a prompt is using your brain's autocomplete feature. So your brain works exactly the way Google does. If you start putting in words, it's going to offer a few suggestions, and the more words you put in, the more precise the suggestion is going to be. So this is a great way to trigger your mind into finding interesting answers. So let's start with, here's what's challenging about. So you repeat this, and then you
these.
Pull your card.
Here's what's challenging about. I got a blank
okay,
card.
Blank.
Those are the right in your own.
Right in your own. Let me see what you have here.
Here's what's challenging about podcasts.
Yes. Yeah, about live.
Here's what's challenging about Disneyland. Disneyland is super expensive. It's hard to get to, especially when you have kids, but you want it to go. And now I'm at this point in my life where I want to go without my kids. And that's what's challenging about Disneyland.
Very good.
I played this before.
Michael, here's what's challenging about.
Here's what's challenging about an out-of-control party. The drugs. There's just too, they get out of control, they end up being under your floorboards, mom and dad comes in, finds them, you get grounded for 2.5 years. That's what's challenging about an out-of-control party.
So, as you can see, we get put on the spot, we just start talking, and things come out. You want to do an analogy now?
Just do an analogy, yeah. So, let's do, nature is like.
Nature is like a remote control. You have all these options that you can pick and choose what you want to go to, and just like the click of a button, you are there, back to your natural state. I don't even know if that made sense, but
nice. The key to the game is speak before you think. So you win the game regardless.
If it makes sense.
There are levels to it, right? We talked about ending strong. So if every one of your answers is great, but you're ending super weakly and like, yeah, I think I messed up, then we'd be addressing that, right? So one of them is just speak, and you're doing a phenomenal job at that. So once we, if we can get that, we don't care about the content, then we add to that, ending strong, then we add to that the content.
Okay.
Cool. So Michael's gonna show us a remarkable example. Let's see what happens. Dreams are like.
Dreams are like an elephant, because elephants have great memory, and dreams are just stuck in your memory for eons and eons. You can't get them out of there. So dreams are like elephants because really, at the end of the day, it's all about memory.
Nice. You have very different dreams from me. I forget them instantly.
Awesome.
Let me do one, because okay. One of our principles, our beliefs, our values in Ultra Speaking is that if one of us gets put on a spot, or anyone, the other one has
okay.
to do it as well. So I'm going to do one. Getting older. Getting older is like having kids, because both of them are extraordinarily tough. I've only recently started to feel what it's like to feel my body get older. And I think you can see it as something incredibly tough, or as a beautiful opportunity for growth. And it's just like having kids. Getting older is like having kids, because you really get to choose how you're going to approach it.
Awesome. I like that we finished strong there. So where can people get a hold of you? So this game is sold online yet? Not yet?
Yes, you can go to ultraspeaking.com/game. Buy your copy there. And the beautiful thing about it is it makes for an awesome party game, and it makes for an even better training tool. You can train with people, you can also train by yourself, and start to create neural pathways in how often you speak in terms of analogies, or think in terms of metaphors, or just get comfortable with starting sentences not knowing what's going to happen. This is really a training your brain tool, And once you're familiar with these ways of thinking, speaking gets so much easier and so much more fun.
Amazing. So ultraspeaking.com
/game/game.
Okay, cool. So check these guys out. They have a website, ultraspeaking.com. Give me social media.
We have a MySpace account from 1997.
No, we don't. We have a LinkedIn profile. But other than that, the best way to get our insights, find out what we're thinking about, what we're discovering along our journey, is to join our newsletter.
Cool. So,
and that's on our website.
Check out the website.
Ultraspeaking.com.
Tristan and Michael, thank you so much for hanging out. Ice bath and sauna was awesome earlier, and just all that insights that you've shared. So some of the main takeaways I have is get out there and practice. Go to Toastmasters. Speak before you think. It's just about practicing, training that brain, just letting it loose and not worrying about so much about thinking so much. And pick up their book, play this game. It's a tool. It's amazing, and I'm sure there's gonna have a lot more online learning to come. I'm hoping for myself personally. It's a selfish request there, but yeah. So check them out. Get out there. Start practicing your speaking. Believe in yourselves and unlock what's already within you. Okay. So again, if you like this, please subscribe, like, share, connect with these guys, and thank you so much.
I think the most important thing people can do to help you is to leave a review. I think that's the best thing for discoverability, for everything. So if you enjoyed this and you want to help Gio out, head to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast and give them a beautiful, well-deserved 5-star review.
Thank you.
Get this thing launched.
Appreciate that. All right, guys. You heard it. Go do it. Leave a review. Have a good day. Peace.
Peace.
All right. Oh, we forgot to do a song. We should do a song. Let's jam a song. Okay. We're not out yet, guys.
Right.
This is like the bonus track. If you kept the CD player on long enough,
nice.
You get surprised by...
This might sound terrible, guys, but...
So we're just going to wing it here. So we're going to
sing before
we think.
Sing before we think.
Leave a review. Peace.